Und herzlich willkommen zur zweiten Episode im Jahr 2022 und zur 97. insgesamt des Oshun Sneaker Podcasts mit mir Simon Buß und mit dem wunderbaren, ganz fantastischen Amadeus Thüner. Und Amadeus, wenn ich das richtig gedeutet habe, die Signale und Schwingungen, die hier so zwischen den beiden Mikrofonen hin und her wabern.
Worauf läuft das hinaus?
Ja, genau. Dann hast du ein bisschen Fernweh, richtig?
Ja, definitiv. Es ist Mitte Januar und der Januar ist nicht nur gefühlt, sondern auch faktisch der längste Monat des Jahres. Es ist einfach so, nach so einem Feiertagsmonat wie dem Dezember kommt man in diesen Januar und er zieht sich und er wird immer länger und länger. Und das sind nicht 31 Tage, das sind eigentlich 131 Tage. Und ich habe jetzt schon wieder Fernweh nach dem, was ja gerade eigentlich mal so knapp 2 Wochen her ist, und zwar will ich aber wieder ans Meer. Aber ehrlicherweise muss man auch sagen, bei dem Wetter bin ich auch ganz froh, irgendwie ein bisschen zu Hause zu sein. Und von daher, es ist halt einfach, es ist Januar, was soll ich dir erzählen? Aber ansonsten gibt's auch nichts zu klagen, das ist Nörgeln auf hohem Niveau. Von daher, ich bin mir sehr sicher, dass wir ganz bald wieder ans Meer können oder auch irgendwo anders hin. Von daher geht's mir dahingehend ganz gut und ich bin froher Dinge. Wie geht's dir denn überhaupt?
Ist denn schon, gut, bevor wir auf Frage eingehen, ja, gut, ist denn schon irgendetwas geplant? Also bist du so jemand, der dann gemeinsam mit deiner Verlobten schon frühzeitig irgendwie plant, so, oh Mensch, und dann fahren wir im Februar dahin und im April kommt dann die Reise und im September, Mensch, dann machen wir 2 Wochen so, davon 4 Tage dies und 5 Tage das, oder ist das eher immer so ein bisschen spontan, ach Mensch, komm, hast du nicht auch Bock, ist gerade Mittwoch, lass doch Freitag mal hier hinfahren, wird bestimmt ganz schön.
Also ich bin ja eigentlich ein super organisierter Mensch und plane gerne durch. Das hat mehrere Gründe, unter anderem den, dass ich natürlich auch ein Maß an Vorfreude entwickeln kann. Aber ich glaube, was so Urlaube oder Reisen anbelangt, bin ich dann irgendwie spontaner, als ich eigentlich sein möchte. Aber so spontan im eher negativen Sinne, weil mir dann gerne auch zu spät auffällt, dass ich ja eigentlich doch irgendwohin hätte fahren können oder sollen. So wie im letzten Jahr, wo es keinen klassischen Sommerurlaub gab, weil uns einfach zu spät aufgefallen ist, dass wir vielleicht mal einen Sommerurlaub machen könnten oder sollten.
Es war aber auch kein richtiger Sommer, muss man euch
dann auch zugute halten. Ja, oder wobei, ja, es gab ja schon so Sommertage, aber man geht ja irgendwie noch davon aus, es wäre dann so Ende Juli, Anfang August perfekt. Aber letztes Jahr wäre es ja eher so Anfang Juni gewesen. Und von daher, das macht die Planung natürlich auch ein bisschen schwierig. Also bisher geplant für 2022 ist auf jeden Fall eine längere Städtereise nach Paris. Und sicherlich auch der ein oder andere Amsterdam-Trip, wobei, wie gesagt, es sind ja auch so ein bisschen Städtetrips, manchmal auch ein bisschen mit Arbeit verbunden. Das kann dann durchaus auch ein bisschen spontaner funktionieren. Ich glaube, wirklich geplant werden sollte dann jetzt bald auch mal der Sommerurlaub. Dann hat man den mindestens auf jeden Fall auch schon mal fest. Mhm. Und ja, so um Winter herum bin ich eigentlich eh nicht so der klassische Urlaubstyp, also im Sinne von Skigebiet oder sonst irgendwas. Von daher, das muss jetzt auch nicht. Ja, aber das sind aktuell so die Gedanken, die Ideen. Mal schauen, wie sich das natürlich auch noch mit dieser Pandemie entwickelt, was man machen kann oder was man vielleicht auch nicht machen kann. Und den Rest, ja, der passiert dann wieder spontan.
Das geht dann meistens auch schneller, als man gucken kann.
So ist das nämlich, so ist das.
Um es mal mit einer Floskel auszudrücken. Dann kommen wir mal zu der Rubrik, die uns hier seit fast Tag 1 begleitet im Oshun Sneaker Podcast, und zwar der Frage nach dem Schuh, der sich heute am Tag an unserem Fuß befunden hat. Amadeus, mein Lieber, what's on your feet today?
Am heutigen Tag ist an meinem Fuß der Nike Air Jordan 1 High mit Armand Manier, und ich glaube, dieser Schuh hat in der letzten Episode, in unserer Best of 2021 Episode, einfach viel zu wenig Liebe von mir bekommen, und deswegen war es mir einfach ein Anliegen, den heute nochmal unterzubringen, und das traf sich dann ganz gut. Ich hatte ihn heute dann auch am Fuß. Eine Großtat von James Whitner, und der hat ja im letzten Jahr durchaus so das ein oder andere Große geschafft, und zwar natürlich den Armand Manier Jordan 3. Unfassbar guter Schuh. Wer dazu noch was hören möchte, falls das nicht irgendwie schon genug war, was man in den letzten 365 Tagen dazu hören konnte, der hört sich auf jeden Fall unsere letzte Episode nochmal an. Er hat aber auch mit Social Status, wo er ja auch eben der Vorsitzende sozusagen ist, ja auch die Nike Dunk Mids gemacht. Also von daher, da ist wirklich viel Gutes passiert, und der Jordan 1 kam dann noch zum Ende des Jahres und ist wirklich eine Großtat, kann man nur so sagen. Schöne kontemporäre Stilistik auch, die er da wieder aufgesetzt hat mit diesen Beige-Cremetönen. Dazu noch das recht dunkle Bordeaux eben als Highlight-Farbe. Großartige Verarbeitung auch, und Obwohl ich ja nicht mehr so wirklich den Blick für Non-OG-Colorways habe, weil mich das eigentlich nicht so kriegt, ist diese Collab aber in sich so extrem schlüssig und eben auch eine schöne Ergänzung zum Jordan 3. Von daher musste der sein, einfach ein unfassbar guter Schuh und der ist heute an meinem Fuß. Was hat es bei dir an den Fuß geschafft?
Glaube ich auch etwas, was dafür sorgt, dass wir in eine Situation kommen, die wir so noch nicht so oft hatten, Amadeus. Wir haben beide einen 1er Jordan an, beide Aha. mit der Hauptfarbe weiß.
Na, guck mal.
Aber mir ist es ein 1er Jordan Lens Mountain, der weiße Hai Sehr von 2014.
Gut. Traum.
Ein Schuh, den ich vor ziemlich genau einem Jahr gekauft habe, bekommen habe. Deshalb habe ich in Erinnerung daran den Schuh heute nochmal ausgepackt. Und es ist tatsächlich so, dass ich in den letzten ein, zwei Jahren 1er Jordans eigentlich wieder sehr selten getragen habe. Ich habe so vor 3-4 Jahren eine Phase gehabt, da habe ich sehr viel 1er Jordan getragen und aktuell, keine Ahnung, nicht so ganz meiner Stilistik entsprechen. Ich kann es nicht besser erklären. Es sind dann doch eher so die Low-Tops, die ich gerne trage, da auch dann unterschiedlich von irgendwie Dad-Shoe über Air Max bis hin zu, keine Ahnung, allem, was so das 2000er Running Game hergibt. Aber heute hat es ein 1er Jordan geschafft. Ähnlich wie du gerade die Kreativleistung hinter dem Amor Manier beschrieben hast, ist es für mich eben auch Lance Mountain, ein unfassbarer Skater der 80er Jahre, Mitglied der Bones Brigade, einfach ein unfassbarer Typ gewesen für Skateboarding und auch weit darüber hinaus für die gesamte Kultur. Und der hat ja mit Nike zusammen nicht nur einen einzigen Schuh gemacht, da sind ja mehrere Schuhe über die Jahre zusammen mit Lance Mountain entstanden, aber dieser 1er Jordan hat es mir damals so unfassbar angetan und ich bin sehr, sehr glücklich, diesen Schuh zu besitzen, diese unfassbare Kreativleistung von Lance Mountain zusammen mit Nike SB und deshalb mein What's on my feet today, der 1er Jordan High. Lance Mountain.
Ich weiß noch, wie ich mich damals auf mein Fahrrad geschwungen habe, um von Kreuzberg 61 rüber nach Mitte zu fahren, und zwar zu Civilist, um dort in-store beide Schuhe kaufen zu können. Ich bin eigentlich angetreten, um den schwarzen zu kaufen und hatte dann aber noch die Möglichkeit, den weißen auch zu kaufen und habe gedacht, ja komm, lassen wir die Kreditkarte glühen, scheiß drauf. Der muss auch ran und dann habe ich tatsächlich beide mitgenommen und wenn man sich das heute überlegt, dass man bei so einem Release einfach in den Laden gehen konnte, natürlich war ich einigermaßen pünktlich, aber es gab kein Campout, es war kein Schlange stehen, es war einfach ein dorthin fahren und da sein und dass man die Möglichkeit hatte, den zu kaufen, ja, das scheint schier unmöglich, aber ja, das gab es tatsächlich früher noch, das war sehr schön, ich bin auch sehr froh,
ja.
Rückblickend betrachtet, dass ich beide dann auch direkt mitgenommen habe, auch wenn es danach die nächsten Tage und Wochen nur Wasser und Brot gab und ein bisschen Ketchup mit Nudeln, aber das musste auf jeden Fall sein und wenn du dann mal darüber nachdenkst, wie uns dieser Schuh auch verbunden hat, ne? Es gab ja dieses Sneaker-Shorty-Interview, was du im Rahmen von Turnschuh TV mit mir gemacht hast. Jetzt überlege ich gerade, wann war das? War auf jeden Fall kurz nach Release. Ne?
War auch Sommer 2014.
Ja, auf jeden Fall. Ja. Auf jeden Fall. Und da hatte ich den am Fuß und der hat dich so getriggert, dass du sogar deinen normalen Fragenkatalog bei dem Sneaker Shorty, ne, immer so das klassische, so lieber schlicht oder Jeremy Scott und das und so, sogar unterbrochen hast, weil du auf diesen Schuh hinaus wolltest und gesagt hast, so kriege ich deinen weißen Air Jordan 1 SB Lance Mountain, den du gerade am Fuß trägst und ich musste dich leider enttäuschen. Und dann hat es noch ein paar Jährchen gedauert und dann hast du ihn ja halt, wie du auch gerade schon erzählt hast, ein paar Jährchen später dann halt eben bekommen. Aber wie schön sich da auch wieder der Kreis schließt, ne? Und was für schöne Geschichten man auch so um Schuhe drumherum bauen kann. Irgendwie auch eine gute Herleitung zu dem, was sicherlich gleich in unserem Interview passieren wird. Da geht's auch um so ein paar legendäre Geschichten.
Ja, absolut. Legendär für den 1er Lance Mountain auch dann so diese Entwicklung, dass ich damals kurz nach Release auf dem Soulmart stand und mein guter Kumpel Sören ihn bei sich am Tisch hatte, wir gequatscht haben, der so, ja Mensch, wir haben ja die gleiche Größe, Simon, könntest du mitnehmen, machen wir für, keine Ahnung, für 200. Ich glaube, es war sogar noch günstiger, es war so knapp unter 200 und ich habe gesagt, nee,
doch, wirklich?
Du, das ist also irgendwie 40, 50 über Retail, das, irgendwie, nee, kein Bock. ich guck mal weiter.
Heute lacht man darüber.
Ja, total, total, weil ich dann jahrelang irgendwelchen Apothekenpreisen hinterhergerannt bin und gesagt so, nee, irgendwie, ich sehe es jetzt nicht ein, 400 Steine für den Schuh zu legen, wenn mir der gute Sören das Ding noch vor ein paar Jahren noch für knapp 200 angeboten hat. Das geht auf gar keinen Fall. Und der Kreis schließt sich an der Stelle, dass auf exakt diesem Soulmart ein gewisser junger Mann zu Gast war, auf der dort in der Mercedes World oder wie auch immer das Ding in Berlin-Charlottenburg in der Nähe der Universität heißt.
Du meinst das gute alte Salzufer, ne? Ja. Mercedes World trifft's da sehr gut. Schönheiten auf 3 Etagen. Gut, falsches Thema, Entschuldigung. Zurück zu dem, was du sagen wolltest, dass du dort einen jungen Herrn treffen konntest.
Ganz genau. Ich habe, es ist eine Sneaker-Messe, ich habe sehr viele junge Herren getroffen. Aber einen habe ich auch zum Gespräch auf der Bühne getroffen. Nein, ich habe auch mehrere auf der Bühne getroffen. Worauf möchte ich hinaus? Der aktuelle Gast dieser Episode war auch Gast auf der Bühne auf diesem Soulmart. Damit wollte ich gerade die Klammer schließen. Er hat 1997 seine eigene Clothing-Brand gegründet, ist Besitzer von Boutique-Stores, führt eine New Yorker Kreativagentur und bringt damit auch noch Merch an den Start. Er bespielt unterm Dach von Hypebeast einen eigenen Business-Podcast. Er hat mit einigen der angesehensten Brands der Welt zusammengearbeitet und kollaboriert und hat der Szene mit dem Pigeon SB Dunk einen der wirklich legendärsten Sneaker geschenkt, die es nur gibt. Es ist eine ganz besondere Ehre, ihn hier zu Gast zu haben und in den nächsten Minuten ihn einmal nach bester Ausschulmanier im Fragenhagel zu verhaften. Die Rede ist von keinem geringeren als Jeff Staple. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thanks. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be on Oshuhen.
That was quite good. That was
my best, the best I could do, yeah.
That's right. So, Jeff, in how many interviews and conversations do you get asked about the 2005 Pigeon release, and how annoying is it for you that we do the same right now? Be honest.
Honestly, it's not annoying to me. People think it's annoying to me, but, you know, it's a blessing to me that I've been able to create something that is still talked about 15 some odd years later. That's an honor. You know what I mean? Like, how many artists and creatives create something that no one even talks about once, much less the following year, much less the following decade. So I never look, there's an American saying that says, never look a gift horse in the mouth. I don't even know why that, I don't even know the understanding of that, but basically it's saying, like, you know, the overarching meaning of that is that, like, be thankful for your gifts. And if people want to ask me about something that I created over a decade ago, it's an honor for me to answer.
Okay, great. Then let's talk about that. Do you still answer the question with the same passion more than 15 years later? Or is it sometimes the feeling of, you said you've not feeling being annoyed about that, but being reduced a little bit too much to this specific release. But besides the SB Dunk, you created a lot more different kind of styles and sneakers back in the days. And still now.
I mean, we had already done a lot of shoes with Nike at the time. So the relationship was already built and established. And the Nike New York City Dunk was part of a anniversary series of the Dunk itself, where they were doing different city-based Dunks. You might have seen the London Dunk, the infamous Paris Dunk. There was the incredibly rare Tokyo Dunk, for whatever reason, less popular LA Dunk. But there was a New York Dunk. And I remember the call from my friend Marcus at Nike SB, who said, you know, it's the anniversary of the Dunk. We want a Dunk dedicated to the city of New York. We think you're the perfect candidate to design it. Are you interested? And that was it. It was a phone call. I hung up.
Crazy.
I screamed at the top of my lungs. I danced. I jumped up and down because the Dunk is and was one of the greatest silhouettes of all time for Nike. New York is one of the greatest cities in the world. So for me to have the honor of being able to do a Dunk dedicated to New York on a, you know, with Nike, one of the greatest brands in the world, was fucking amazing. So we went about doing it. And, you know, when you get tasked with something like that, it's like, there's a great responsibility, right? New Yorkers don't fuck around. Sneakerheads don't fuck around. So, while this was an awesome opportunity, it was also an awesome opportunity to fail. Like, this is failing on the grandest stage. Like, wow, Nike, New York, dunk. You fucked that one up, Jeff. You know, like, that could have happened too. So there was a lot of pressure. And I didn't want to, I didn't want to do New York a disservice. I really wanted something that was authentic and core. And so, you know, we tossed around ideas of doing like an Empire State, you know, Empire State Building or New York City subway or New York City taxi, and like just sort of typical things that like New Yorkers are known for if you're like a tourist, if you're like out of state, you know. But the idea of doing something that like was really meant for New Yorkers by New Yorkers that maybe would be slightly confusing to an outsider. And I mean, even if you lived like in New Jersey or Connecticut, which is like an hour away from New York City, you might not understand the thing. I was kind of going for that insider, if you know, you know, kind of mentality. And so the pigeon was this idea that we had been using on our clothing, or we were like developing a mascot for the clothing line. And I really love the idea of the pigeon for that. And we hadn't yet launched it. So the idea of being able to launch this mascot on a Nike shoe would be incredible. But, you know, it also fit the brief too. So when we proposed that back to Nike, they were like, you know, they're from Beaverton, Oregon. And they're like, we don't get it. What do pigeons have to do with New York? And I had to convince them that like, yeah, that's why you don't get it, because you're not from New York. Like, we want to do something for New Yorkers. And they were sort of like, but how do we know that's true? You know, like, they don't. They would literally have to live in New York for years to understand
what
pigeons mean to New Yorkers. Yeah, they had to trust me, which was great that they did trust me. So when we released that, they finally approved it. We released it. And naively, what I really didn't know was that, like, whether you live in Amsterdam or, you know, Berlin or Venice, like, pigeons are just city birds. Like, pigeons are everywhere that humans live in urban centers, densely populated urban centers. Pigeons thrive. So if you're a city kid, if you skate, if you do graffiti, if you live in street culture, you probably are encountering pigeons on a daily basis. And that's the part that honestly I did not realize. I was doing it for New York. But the instant global sensation that happened with it was kind of a surprise to me.
Mm. The date itself, when the shoe released, I guess you already spoke a lot about that, but let's talk about the day after the release. How do you felt back then when the whole thing happened? On the one hand, like the positive thing, having this release, but on the other hand, kind of this negative thing with the riot and maybe and the negative press and so on. How do you felt back then, one day after the release?
50-50 of elated success because the shoes sold out, they sold really well, but 50% embarrassment, you know, because I am a business owner, I am a shop owner, people got arrested, some people got hurt, I took up, you know, the New York City Police Department's time, you know, like maybe because there was like 50 cops dealing with the pigeon dunk riot, there was like 50 people that couldn't get a police fast enough to their real emergency. You know what I mean? So like I had a lot of guilt and embarrassment. And quite frankly, Nike was like really mad at me at the time. They were like, they claimed that they were mad at me because, you know, a Nike had never been on the cover of a newspaper, a New York City newspaper before that. And now it's on the cover, great, but it's associated with this word riot, bad, you know? So they were allegedly mad at me, but I know they really weren't. They just had to say they were mad at me, but like they really weren't mad. So it was 50-50, man. It was like really like, man, I kind of fucked up as a business owner, but I did a good job in designing something. I just didn't anticipate the demand that came from it, you know? So it was bittersweet. And frankly, the fact that we're talking about this now, you know, that was February 22nd, 2005. So now it's like 16 plus years later that we're talking about it. I never thought that people would still be coveting and talking about the pigeon dunk today. I thought maybe people would talk about it for 1 to 6 months, like, you know, because there was like, it just, sneaker culture was so on a subculture back then. And the one thing that you could sort of credit the pigeon dunk for is making sneaker culture on the masses, you know, like putting it on the map, really. You know, sneaker culture was like really a niche back then. And then after, because of the news article, because of the resale prices, because of the nightly news, it became quote unquote mainstream, more pop culture. And so that's maybe one of the things that the Pigeon Dunk is known for. But prior to that, no one talked about shoes for like years and years and years after they came out. Yeah, you know, like it was very, very rare for that to happen. So that's the blessing part of releasing the Pigeon Dunk.
Like you said, it's a bittersweet memory, a bittersweet thing in at that point. But of course, it is a great moment in sneaker culture and especially for Nike SB. So have you been happy seeing the hype about and around the SB Dunk coming back like 2 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, the Dunk became very, very, SB Dunk became extremely popular then. You know, I would like to say that we helped really rebuild Nike's foray into skateboarding, because this was now their second attempt. You know, true. Their first attempt was pretty bad.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we had a lot of people don't know this, but I actually designed the first Nike SB website.
Oh, really?
No way.
Yeah, the launch website. Yeah, I designed the first website. I also designed the first few catalogs for Nike SB. Like they had these little square print catalogs. Like I helped design those. So like I was some t-shirt graphics as well that Nike SB was doing. So besides the Pigeon Dunk, we were really helping SB out a lot in the early days. And yeah, SB had a huge growth. Then SB Dunks sort of like died, right? And then a couple of years ago, like 2017, there was a resurgence. And credit to the SB team for really being strategic and calculated about it. You know, you have to remember that, like, they came back to the Pigeon Dunk. We did the Black Pigeon Dunk. They came back to the Tiffany Dunk with, like, the sort of canary dunks and the different color dunks. And then they made sure to get them on the feet of Travis Scott, right? And so Travis Scott organically was digging in the crates for old dunks, but also getting seeded dunks from the SB team. So you have this convergence of the revival of Pigeon, the revival of Diamond, Travis Scott. And then I remember that November that year at ComplexCon was like, we were debating how to announce that the Pigeon was returning. And we were talking about, me and the SB team were talking about all these different strategies and ad campaigns and marketing plans and all this shit. Like, what are we going to do? How do we announce this? I was like, I have an idea. How about at ComplexCon, I just put a pair on my feet and I just walk around.
Perfect idea.
Right? And so also on that, you know, I host a lot of talks and stuff. And ComplexCon had me host this incredible talk that is on video now. You can watch it. It's me, Hiroshi Fujiwara, Sarah Andelman from Colette, Andre 3000 from Outkast, and John Wexler from Yeezy.
What
all
lineup.
On stage at the same fucking time. The same fucking time, right? And I was the host and the MC on this huge stage. I walk out on stage with the Black Pigeon Dunks and everyone's just like trying to like zoom in on what is on my feet, because they see the Pigeon is clear, but it's not on the typical gray shoe. I mean, you could not have a more effective and zero cost marketing campaign than just like me walking around, you know? And I remember Nick Diamond's booth was like destroyed because he was dropping his diamonds there. So it was a wonderful way to like bring back the power of the Dunk. And that sustained all the way until, I would say, this year, 2021, where now, you know, me personally, I feel like the Dunks are getting exhausted again. Like they're sort of hitting a crescendo where like I think people are getting a little bit sick of the Dunk and people should start, you know, maybe Nike needs to start pulling back on the Dunk a little bit and letting another shoe take some shine. But what a resurgence that we were part of for the Dunk.
Fast forward to now, as you already entered like the stage of 21 and what's happening with the Dunk right now. But what was your favorite release of the past month, maybe even the full year of 2021? What shoes, what silhouettes, which collabs were you digging? Which one were you feeling? Where did you say, wow, I definitely have to get those?
Of this year or of like the past few years?
Whatever you would like to have. If 2021 hasn't had anything that caught you, maybe 2020 or 2019 did.
Let's see. I think what's been really exciting. I'm like looking around my room. Let's see. Oh, you know what? You know who's? You know, I got to give props to Salehe Bembury. Man, mm-hmm. I mean, this guy. He's a friend of mine, so I know how he thinks, and I know his inner workings and stuff. He's a one man show. Like, I have 50 people behind me. Like, Salehe does not even have a fucking assistant. Like, he's one man, and he single-handedly brought this unknown Chinese brand called Anta into, like, the spotlight, right? Single-handedly. Like, Anta is the number one sportswear brand in China. They could have paid a huge agency. They could have paid Wieden and Kennedy or whatever fucking massive agency hundreds of millions of dollars to do a marketing campaign, and it wouldn't have done what Salehe did on his own. Period, full stop. What he did with New Balance. New Balance, you could argue, is a different story because New Balance has been doing so well with their collaborations with Ame and Joe Fresh Goods and, like, you know, like Josh Vides. And, like, so they had a big momentum. Salehe was part of that momentum, but he did an incredible job. And then now this week, you know, as we're speaking, we're talking about the Croc Salehe Bembury now. Like, this dude is just, he's the people's champ, you know? So, like, pretty much anything he touches is just an amazing experience to be able to watch. So I'm really proud of Salehe. I mean, this goes back a little bit further, but I'm kind of like a geek fan of, like, HyperAdapt and, like, all, like, okay, those self-lacing things. I really like that. I mean, they're kind of kooky and they're not that popular, but I like when Nike does weird shit like that, like when they try stuff, you know? Like, for instance, I recently got a pair of, you know, the Nike Bedouin, B-Do-Win. Mm-hmm. It looks like a wallaby. Like, when you look down in history, I always love the things that Nike tried to do out of the box. Like, Nike considered and, like, just, you know, even the old ACG stuff, like the Deschutes and the, you know, like the Moabs and stuff like that. Stuff that you wouldn't expect Nike to do, I always love. Or the Air Mach, the ACG Air Mach. Like, I love that shoe, you know, like. So I just tend to gravitate. I think the HyperAdapt and the Bedouin, which are two very different shoes. One sort of harks to old school, one harks to the future. But I love when Nike tries to do, like, zigzag stuff. And then actually another outlet, I forgot, from Australia. I forgot the name of the outlet, but they asked me at the time a couple months ago what my favorite shoe of the year was. And at the time it was the Adidas NMD S1, which is, like, the latest version of their NMD. And I wear that shoe a ton. I really, really love that shoe. So that's another one. Those are some highlights from the year. There's too many. There's, like, so many shoes. And then, you know, we could talk about, oh, you know what? I got a pair of the Satan Mischief Air Max 97s.
Really? You have been, quote, blessed?
Yeah. Yeah, I have those. Yeah, I have those with the blood in them. I got those. Crazy. I'm happy to have those. And then the lawsuit that happened and everything like that, you know, love that.
knowing what kind of footwear you are in is one part to make the question a full question, because you, let's put it like this, you know how to release a good pair of sneakers. How does a good release in 2021, 2022 definitely have to look like? What's good, what's not, what do you have to offer the community? What kind of experience?
It's a cliche to say it, but, like, you have to have a story nowadays. You have to have a deep narrative and a storyline, yes, to whatever you're releasing, you know. And if you don't, you're just kind of, like, releasing more products, you know what I mean? And as you can see on any Hypebeast day, like, there's so many products that are coming out that, quite frankly, even today, even if you have a great story and great design, that's, like, the minimum, actually. You actually need even a little bit more than that, you know? You need maybe, like, an enigmatic, really engaging figurehead or founder, you know, or, like, a brand behind it. You know what I mean? Like, I'll bring up the Ame Leon Dore projects with New Balance that they're coming out with. Those shoes, no disrespect to Teddy, I love everything that he's built. But if you took off Teddy and Ame off that shoe, that shit is, like, Sears discount, like, it's just like a regular ass New Balance, you know what I mean? But it's the mystique of Ame and the marketing campaign and the photo shoots that he does with it and like the curation. That's what makes that shoe so, so desirable, you know? So it's a great sort of like example that like design doesn't have to be like this crazy, you know, you look at Sean Witherspoon's Adidas, right? Those are like design overload. Like he put so much detail, color, fabrication, so much craziness into that design. But he's got a great story and a great figurehead, of course, in Sean, but totally different design aesthetic than Ame Leon Dore, but they both work for their respective founders, you know? So I think it also matters like who the founder is that tells the right story.
You said it a bit earlier, in 2005, sneaker culture was just a niche or a small bubble, and the Pitch and Dunk made this small bubble very visible to the public. Very visible. Mm-hmm. Today, this little bubble is a multi-billion dollar business with a lot of products you mentioned as well, like a minute ago, a lot of products being released at the moment, every day, every week. A few months ago, Amadeus and I, we asked the German sneaker community, our audience, is the sneaker culture dead? What would you answer to a question like this? Yes, it was polarizing. We all know that this culture is not really dead. But is it too much money in this game? Is it too many releases? Too little time to experience all of the maybe even really good stories? Or is everything just going well?
I think it's far from dead. I think 5 to 7 years ago, if you asked me this question, I would have thought that sneaker culture would be dead or that the bubble would burst, you know? But I don't think it's going anywhere. I think the idea that, first of all, there's many people on this earth, most of them have 2 feet, and now they're more accepting of the fact that you can have more than 5 to 10 shoes in your closet. It used to be really weird when you had more than 10 shoes in your closet, but now it's kind of like, you're not even really a sneakerhead if you have like 25 or 30. That's sort of like the new norm now, you know what I mean? So in terms of the reason why I bring that up, that quantity up, is because all these brands releasing all these products, they actually have homes to go to. They're not just like jamming the market, you know, like people are actually copying all these shoes and they're actually putting them in their rotation. So I think the culture is alive and well. A lot of people will say resale is killing the culture. Yes, it is, in the sense that it's making it extremely difficult for many people to get shoes, but it's also creating the halo effect. That's what people forget. It's like there's this halo that comes about where when you see the Ame Leon New Balance, there's a trickle-down effect of like the typical gray, you know, 577, like normal shoe that like, oh, because Ame did that, I want to do this. Because Yeezy did that to his Adidas, I now want to wear a pair of regular Ultra Boosts. And it's really interesting to me. And I see it day in and day out where like people are all mad trying to get a pair of Yeezys. They can't. And then I see them just pieing a pair of like Alpha Bounce or whatever it is. And it's just like, yeah, or the NMDs, you know, the NMDs were, the success of the NMD was a direct correlation from the inability to get Yeezys.
Agree to that.
Yeah. You could love it or hate it, but like, you are part of that system by wanting shoes, you know what I mean? And it's just a game of supply and demand. And I will say that too, you know, I can speak for myself as a creator of shoes, that when I put out a sneaker, oftentimes you're designing the shoe 12 to 18 months before it actually comes out. And you actually have to determine the production run of the shoe 8 to 12 months before it comes out, right? So right now we're in December 2021. I'm designing a shoe. It's going to come out September 2022, you know, 10 months from now. And the collaborator is like, hey, Jeff, how many pairs you want to do? Oh, man. I don't fucking know. Like, I don't
what
know.
What a question.
10, 20, 30. Yeah, what a question. And by the way, oh, Jeff, the ones that we don't sell, right, if we don't sell enough, we're going to put them on sale in our factory outlet store. Or we're going to destroy them and destroy the earth, or you're responsible for owning them. Damn. Like, that's a big responsibility.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I can't be like, yeah, I want to make everyone happy. Let's do 3 million pairs. You know, like, so that's why as business people, we are like, yo, there's a lot on the line here. Let me be conservative. I'm fairly confident I could do 35,000 pairs, whatever it is. And then like, maybe I might even subtract down to 30 to make sure that I don't have any inventory left and they're not on sale. Because then even the biggest hater of resale will know that if my shoes are on a discount rack at a discount store, you're not going to want the next release of my shoe. That's going to be seen as a failure for you, right? Facts. So I want to protect my brand image against that. So I'm going to make less. And so I'm just trying to take an educated guess. I'm not trying to purposefully create a bad experience. I want, at the end of the day, I would assume most designers would want this. I want as many people who want my shoe to be able to get them at regular retail price. But I want to be able to hit that number as perfect as possible, right?
Sure.
If 36,200 people want my shoe, I want to make 36,200 pairs of shoes, period. But someone's got to tell me that number. It's really hard to know, you know? So it's like a shot in the dark. Yeah, that's how resale happens. And that's how discounting also happens. You got to sort of dial the number in correctly.
So you don't think that this kind of bubble won't burst in the next couple of months, right?
No. No, not at all. I can almost guarantee it. And now, you know, you've got, there's so many other factors now, because now you've got customizers, right, that are in the game. You've got the shoe surgeons of the world, people who are doing like shoes that, and painting them and reconstructing them. And then you've got guys like, you know, I just did a collaboration with Mosh, who's like a celebrity sort of shoe customizer that released his own shoe. You know, so you've got guys doing their own models. You've got startup sneaker brands that are killing it, like Veja and Allbirds and stuff like that. Like, they're making a huge dent in the industry. And then you've got now the metaverse. Like, yesterday, true, Nike just bought Artifact Studio. Yeah. So now you've got a whole nother universe, you know?
And they put this logo right next to the Jumpman and the Swoosh, showing that it's not just like marketing. Yeah. It's like, okay, no, they really mean what they did.
It's not just a hype.
And huge. Yeah. No. Yeah. It's bigger than, it's not a collaboration. It's also not like, you know, rest in peace to Virgil Abloh. It's not even like a Virgil type deal. Mm. It's like, no, it's Swoosh, Jumpman, Converse, Oops. Artifact.
Crazy.
Fuck.
That's crazy.
Awesome.
Fucking crazy. Yeah.
Jeff, you already talked about the project which will be coming out later in 2020. Maybe you want to tell a little bit more about that. But overall, you once said is up to you to tell the people everything about you and to educate them that they totally understand what Jeff Staple is all about. So beside the project you already teased, what is Jeff Staple all about? What are the projects you are working on these days?
I've actually been really heavily invested in the metaverse recently. And just, you know, getting an understanding of NFTs and how that affects me as a creator in a positive way, for the most part, I think. So we did a collaboration with Artifact, actually, which was hugely successful. We also did a collaboration with Gary Vee, and he has an NFT project. So that was great. So now I'm embarking on what would it look like if I created my own metaverse, like a Stapleverse,
crazy,
if you will, yeah, you know, like what would that look like? So I've been building that. And it's been taking up a ton of my hours, but it's so much fun to work on. And then, strangely enough, on the complete opposite side of that spectrum, next year is my 25th anniversary of Staple. So I started the brand in 1997. Next year's the 25th anniversary. And we have this Rizzoli coffee table book coming out next year.
Crazy. Great.
So like a whole monograph covering the first quarter century of my work, which is... I'm honored to have that. But I don't think anyone else in the world is dropping a coffee table book and an NFT at the same time. Like, I'm like in the past and in the future at the same time. You know, it's really a mind fuck. Yeah, it's a lot of fun though. So like, those are the two things that I'm working on. Next year being the 25th, of course, we have a ton of amazing collaborations and just revisiting work with old friends and old brands that we've worked with in the past. And then, of course, there's just, you know, the day to day of my business, which is Staple and the clothing line that, like, you know, comes out every season. There's my creative agency, Reed Art Department, that comes out. There's the podcast, you know, so like I'm just trying to juggle everything. And, you know, I don't really try to do too much explaining on who Jeff Staple is. I try to let my work speak for itself, and I create a lot of work. And I allow a lot of different people entry into my world. You know, like there's a lot of fans of Jeff Staple that don't own a single piece of Staple clothing, right? And there's a lot of people that have like taken my Skillshare class or listened to my podcast and, you know, or never even heard of the Pigeon Dunk, you know what I mean? And some people love the Pigeon Dunk, but have no idea that I have a podcast. So like, I like the different entry points. And I don't expect people to know everything that I put out, but I put out a lot of entryways so that there's always an easy way to get into my world. And I just try to let my work speak for itself. I'm not really good at like bragging about what I do or constantly showing on social media, like my successes and things that I buy and like, you know, cars that I own and houses that I own. I'm not really that type of person.
So
I try to
lay
low as much as possible.
How many cars do you own? How many houses? But where,
I have a portfolio, but
where does the energy come from? So do you stay up like early in the morning and like doing 1 hour of yoga to get concentration for the whole day? And what, so what's the miracle behind Jeff Staple?
It's really easy when you love what you do.
That's right.
You know, and I know that's also sort of a cliche too.
But it's a good cliche. Like,
it's a great cliche that I think a lot of young people especially take for granted, which is like, do what you love to do when you never work a day in your life, you know? I truly believe that. And the example I like to give is like, you know, imagine your job in life was to review beach hammocks and like sip martinis. You know, like there's a guy who does this, right? He has to review the best beach chairs in the world. His job is to go to every beach and sit in every chair for 8 hours and write a review about how this beach chair is functioning. Imagine that was your job and somebody said to you, hey, you're working too hard, you got to take a vacation, you got to stop, you're a workaholic. I'd be like, what are you talking about? My job is to sit on the beach and review fucking beach chairs. Like,
oh, man.
Don't give me a vacation. I love this. And that's how I feel like my job is. It's like, I love doing it so much that whenever someone wants me to take a vacation or take a break or stop working, or if I go to sleep, that's just time taken away from what I love to do, you know? So I encourage young people who might be listening to this that like, if you're in a situation in your life where like you're not experiencing that, I think you should try to figure out, A, what is the thing that you love to do? There's actually a lot of people that don't even know that answer yet, like what they love to do. And then once you figure out what you love to do, just now figure out how to make a living doing that. And the beautiful thing about the world today is that you could literally be a millionaire playing video games if you wanted to be, you know? So like, there's almost nothing that you can think of that you love to do that you couldn't turn into a profession today. Like literally, I can't think of anything, you know? So it's just really oftentimes the hard part is figuring out what you want to do. And my advice to that question would be, what is the thing that you do that you lose track of time when you're doing it? Like when you're doing this thing, time just evaporates. It just flies. That is probably the thing you should be doing for all your life, you know? And a lot of times people, when they do that thing that they love to do so much, they don't believe that that could be a job, you know, whether it's like driving a car or playing video games or silk screening or like painting or whatever, or freaking cleaning shoes, like whatever, like cleaning your outsole of your shoes. People are like, man, I could just clean this all day, but this isn't a job. Like, look at Jason Mark, multi fucking millionaire from like making a cleaning service, you know? So like, it could literally be anything.
Yeah, the entry point is lower these days, because whatever you can imagine, you can do a living out of that. But most important, as you said, is the passion and the ambition, which is based on like everything you're doing. And of course, you you can be very happy if you can choose whatever you like and do a living out of that, of course. And I guess all of three of us are very happy about that fact. But finding this one takes a lot of ambition, and maybe it's a little bit pressure which is going on. But
it's challenging.
Yeah, definitely.
You know,
it's definitely
challenging.
But in the end, it makes you happy, and then you can do a great job. But if you when you don't be happy about what you're doing, I think you can't do a really good job.
Yeah. Sorry, my dog is going crazy right now. We might want to pause for a second. Can you hear my dog? Oh, wow. Okay.
Do you know the bark at your dog challenge?
No, no.
Simon, you told me you're not on TikTok, so where do you get the information about that challenge?
You don't want to know. But it's a funny thing. Bark at your dog and look at his reaction. He might be a little bit confused.
I wanted to add a point to that, to what you just said. Yeah. The double-edged sword here is that the same reason why what I said, you could take any passion and turn it into a job at this point, right? That same reason is the challenge now, because there's so many options in the world for people nowadays, right? Yeah, so true. What am I interested in? Like, if you guys ever like turn on Netflix and try to like decide what to watch, have you ever just spent an hour looking for what to watch on Netflix but never choosing it, right?
Yeah. Almost every second weekend, yes.
Exactly. It's a challenge. So it's choice paralysis. You're paralyzed by the choices that you have. And I think that's what a lot of young people go through today. It's like they could be anything in the world, but it's like, I don't know what, because I could be like 1,000 different jobs. When I grew up, you could be a doctor or a lawyer. That's pretty much it. Everything else was like a failure, you know? So like nowadays you could be so many things, and I think young people are paralyzed by that. But again, the plus side of it is that because you could be anything, you can choose whatever you want to do and make a passion out of, make a job out of it. So yeah, that's my two cents on careers, career choice.
These are very good two cents, to be honest. And Jeff, many thanks that you took the time to have this going back the days of like releasing the pigeon dung to your current project, to like this wonderful last statement. And we would definitely take 2, 3, 4, 5 more hours to talk with you about every other project in the last 25 years. But maybe we will have another option coming up this year, because there are so many projects coming up, and we would be very happy to do a second podcast with you. But right now, many thanks for taking your time. Really appreciate that.
Thank you too. Yeah, I'd love to come back on. Maybe we'll come back when the 25th anniversary happens and we'll go down memory lane.
Let's do this.
Yeah.
We take you by the word.
Yep. All right. Thank you, guys. This was great.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Und damit vielen Dank, dass ihr bei der 97. Episode mit dabei wart. Ihr könnt alle Episoden wie gewohnt kostenlos auf Spotify, auf Apple Podcasts, Deezer, Amazon Music, Audible, Google Podcasts, Podtail, Podigy und auch bei allen anderen Streaming-Diensten hören. Und wir würden uns sehr freuen, wenn ihr dem O-Shoom-Podcast und unserem News-Podcast O-News dort folgt, wo ihr Podcasts am liebsten hört. Schaut auch auf Facebook und Instagram.com/O-Shoom-Podcast vorbei und interagiert mit uns und der Community. Checkt auf jeden Fall auch die Sneaker-Suchmaschine Sneakerjägers und werdet Teil der Sneakerjägers Germany Community. Supporten könnt ihr uns unter anderem mit einer positiven 5-Sterne-Bewertung bei Apple Podcasts. Über 350 positive Bewertungen hat auch schon. Und eine Rezension würden wir hier gerne mit euch teilen. Coco Kuboy schrieb zuletzt: mein Favorit und mein absoluter Lieblingspodcast. Vielen Dank. Tut uns zwei Gefallen. Erstens, macht's wie Kukoboy und lasst auch eine Rezension da. Und zweitens, supportet die Podcasts und erzählt mindestens einem Freund oder einer Freundin, die sich für Sneaker und Streetwear interessiert, von uns. Show some love, ihr Lieben. Macht es gut. Dankeschön fürs Zuhören und wir hören uns ganz bald wieder hier. Bis dahin, macht's gut. Tschüss.
Ciao, ciao.